Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as you've been hearing from the WNYC newsroom, four of New York's most dangerous and troubled youth prisons will be placed under federal oversight. The agreement between the Justice Department and the New York State Office of Children and Families will impose strict new limits on the use of physical force by guards. Also included in the deal is the hiring of dozens of psychiatrists, counselors, and investigators to work within the juvenile justice system. At the moment, New York State does not have a single full-time psychiatrist on staff to treat juvenile offenders. With me now is Gladys Carrion, Commissioner of the Office of Children and Family Services, which oversees the juvenile justice system. And also joining us is Jeremy Travis, President of John Jay College of Criminal Justice and Chair of Governor Patterson's recent task force on transforming juvenile justice. Commissioner Carrion and Professor Travis, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
Good morning.
And Commissioner, let's get right into it. What's in this deal and what, in your estimation, is the most important feature?
Well, it's a very comprehensive settlement, and it really does. What is the most important feature of it is that really it has safeguards, very strong safeguards to ensure that the young people in our system are safe. And so it really requires us and is very consistent with the direction that we've been going to really limit the use of restraints, to reconsider and modify the current restraint procedures that we have in place. It requires extensive addition for staff for mental health, requires us to develop a very comprehensive behavioral health plan to address the mental health needs of the young people. It requires us to vigorously investigate any allegation of staff misconduct, the excessive use of force in our facilities, and it requires us to conduct these investigations in an impartial and neutral manner. It requires us to have more substance abuse services for the young people, and also a quality assurance piece that we would have to document that we're, in fact, implementing these changes and that we are implementing new policies and procedures and that they're working and that we're being responsive to the terms of the settlement.
The four prisons covered under the settlement, by the way, are the Lansing Residential Center and the Louis Gossett Jr. Residential Center in Lansing, New York, and two residences, one for boys and one for girls, at the Tryon Residential Center in Johnstown. And both of you were on the show late last year to talk about the task force, which Children and Family Services commissioned under Governor Patterson, and Mr. Travis chaired. Professor Travis, you spoke in your report about the allegations of serious abuse and negligence on the part of guards, kids having bones broken and being subject to physical and mental abuse. That's pertinent to the restraints that the commissioner was just talking about. Was that the kind of thing going on in these four prisons, and do you think it's sufficiently and meaningfully addressed in this agreement?
Well, those are indeed the findings of the Department of Justice investigation that set the course in motion for this settlement that was announced by the governor and DOJ yesterday. And so the settlement indeed does address those core findings, a lack of medical care, a lack of mental health services. But as you indicated, in very important ways, the abuse of the young people by the person who are people who are entrusted with their care, the staff. So the task force that I was asked to chair made recommendations about the entire system. The DOJ report and settlement pertained to the four facilities that were the subject of the investigation. But this is an important, very important place for the state to start doing the work that's frankly long overdue. And the question now is, will the commitments that have been made by the state be carried out? And that's why the oversight, continuing oversight by the Justice Department and the two monitors who will be appointed is very important. and whether the policy changes that are being agreed to here will be system-wide, not just to these four facilities.
Listeners, anybody out there who has ever been through these four facilities or otherwise involved with the state juvenile detention centers or juvenile justice system who wants to comment on this, any personal experience with this, or anyone else with a question or a comment, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. For the Commissioner of the Office of Children and Family Services for New York State, Gladys Carrion, and the President of John Jay College of Criminal Justice, Jeremy Travis, who chaired the task force report on this last year. And Professor Travis, reports indicate that guards at the youth prisons will now be barred from physically restraining youths except when a person's physical safety is threatened or a youth is trying to escape from the institution. They will be allowed to use a method in which a youth is forced to the ground and held face down for at most 3 minutes with evaluation by a doctor to follow within 4 hours. I guess that's all in writing in this agreement. Is this a satisfactory policy to you?
Well, this is finally bringing New York State closer into line with what is best practice around the country. What's not explicitly addressed is the philosophy that has now been adopted by Commissioner Carrion, which is that physical restraint is the matter of last resort, that staff need to be trained in ways to deal with difficult youth, with conflicts, with physical aggression, in ways that don't start out with using these physical restraints. That's the way it's done in the most sort of up-to-date modern facilities around the country, and New York State will finally be brought into line with that best practice.
Commissioner Carrion, is it really true, as we've been reporting in the newscasts, that the state doesn't have a single full-time psychiatrist on staff for juvenile offenders?
That's true. Unfortunately, it is true. It's very challenging to really be able to find an adolescent psychiatrist in the state of New York. They're in very great demand, and not many of them are produced. And they're in other settings that, quite frankly, have the ability to provide them with a much higher salary and a different work environment that for many would probably be considered more desirable. We are now in the process of interviewing and are very close to hiring. We've had to work with the university to ensure that we had an academic affiliation and their support and help in really identifying someone that would be suitable and is highly qualified to work in our system. So we are looking forward to having a full-time psychiatrist very soon.
Where's the money going to come from for that?
Well, despite the fact that the state is in a very severe financial crisis, the governor has found resources to support the implementation of this remediation plan in the budget, which was supported by the legislature. There is $18.2 million in the budget to support the implementation of the terms and conditions of the agreement.
Let's take a phone call. Here is Marina in Huntington. Marina, thank you for calling.
Hello. I just have a very general question, sort of a systems question. I work in the child welfare system, and we partner with OCFS now for placement of children coming out of the detention settings. And working in child welfare for the last couple of decades, I've seen that it seems to take a tragedy, a death, a serious abuse case, or a lawsuit, some sort of, you know, court overhaul of the system to really affect meaningful change. And I'm wondering, why does it take that? Why do people in positions of power and leadership not attend to problems that clearly have to be on their desk? Why does it take that kind of a situation to affect that meaningful change?
Professor Travis, why do you think?
Well, one of the key findings of our task force was that the system of juvenile prisons has been off the radar screen of elected officials, of the general public in New York State for decades. These are young people we'd rather not think about. We'd rather not think about the conditions in which they're being kept, whether they're getting the services that they need. And we have, unfortunately, in our state, demonized young people, particularly during the decade of the crack epidemic. We painted young people as being dangerous part of society.
Super predators, I think, was the headline in the New York Post.
That was the word. So I think we've come a long way from that, and our hope is that the Justice Department report, as the caller indicates, has jolted people into finally paying attention again. And the investments made by Governor Patterson, the attention now being paid by the legislature, and very strong involvement from editorial boards and news programs like this one are finally putting it back into the center stage where it belongs. And as I said at the outset, the fact that we now have monitors being imposed by the Justice Department settlement means that it'll be harder for the system to slip back into the sidelines in the future.
George in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, George. Let's try that again. George, I think we have you now. George? Why can't I get George up? There we go. Now we have you. Hi, George.
Hi. How are you, Brian?
Go ahead.
I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I've been a school psychologist and before that a teacher at the training school for boys in Skillman, New Jersey, and also I worked in the 600 schools here in New York in special education, which are run just like juvenile detention centers, believe me. I mean, you know, teachers carry baseball bats and kids are regularly shoved around. I don't know if I could say they've ever been beaten up. I haven't seen any of that, but certainly they're shoved around and they're verbally abused. And the detention center in New Jersey, I mean, it might as well have been a federal prison, back in the 30s or something, because it was very, very, very emotionally brutal to the kids. And the kids were not helped. They didn't come out any better. In fact, a kid came in, he probably came 10 times worse. Many of the kids had a psychosis of one type or another, or developing psychosis. And by the time they got out, they were fully psychotic. I mean, really dangerous.
So do you have faith in what you're hearing so far? Do you have optimism that something can actually change here as a result of this process?
I think the biggest thing, if you could bring psychiatrists into the system and medicate these kids, I think that would probably help more than anything, because the kids really are emotionally disturbed. And I think that, you know, rather than being initially criminal, they're taught to be criminals in these systems, whether it's the 600 schools for the Board of Education or the juvenile detention centers. They come in with an emotional problem. They've come in from families that are abusive. They've come in with histories of being sexually abused and physically abused, emotionally abused. They've come in from unstable situations
and they need,
turned into criminals.
And you said Medicaid, maybe Medicaid sometimes, but also get other kinds of psychiatric care.
Well, medication is probably the primary source. But with some backup in the other services, of course, you know, social workers and whatever. But the problem is that when you give these kids all kinds of support when they haven't had them in the past, and then you take the support away when they leave the institution, they go back to being, they never really catch up. It's sort of like when we put kids in institutions and mental institutions and then let them out on the street without any support.
George, I have to leave it there. Thank you very much. And obviously, the question of how much medication and for whom could be a whole other show. But, Commissioner, before you go, do you now lose jurisdiction as the New York State Commissioner over this area, over these particular four facilities to the federal government or over anything else?
No, not really. Not at all. I think that would have happened if we would have engaged, if we were unable to settle, and if they would then sue us. We continue to have retain control, and what they do is provide oversight and ensure that we are implementing the terms that we agreed to voluntarily. And I think that the press release issued by the Department of Justice does detail the fact that New York State worked very collaboratively with them and very cooperatively, and they also took note of the steps and the reforms that we have implemented to date, which they embraced and thought that we were going in the right direction.
And you were brought in part to do this. You were not part of the old regime under which this was discovered. One other thing, really fast. Last time you were on the show, we talked about a letter you had written to New York's judges that asked them to reconsider sending offenders into the juvenile justice system at all. You wrote in December that judges should, quote, look at community resources for these children and consider alternatives to placement and alternatives to detention. So in the last 6 months, has the sentencing approach changed among New York's judges?
I think it has. It definitely has. The judges are partners. The judiciary has been a very good partner with OCFS, and they've worked really hard with local counties to find alternative to detention and placement programs. And we have many less young people today in our system than we had 3 years ago when I first became commissioner.
Right.
We have a all-time low number of young people in our system right now.
Gladys Carrion, Commissioner of the Office of Children and Family Services. Jeremy Travis, President of the John Jay College of Criminal Justice and Chair of the recent Task Force on Transforming Juvenile Justice. An important day. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you
very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute. What does a fender bender have to do with the New York State Attorney General's race? We'll find out.